Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Now, the book we're talking about is Blackout, and the guest is the author, Marco Caro Carey. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Well, Marco, so where did the book come from? This is your first book, right?
Yes. This is my first attempt at professional writing, and it took several years for it to get to where it is. But this was basically an idea that started almost 8 years ago back home in Switzerland, and it progressed into what it is today. So I'm very excited that this book finally found a home, and is getting some really nice, praise and blurbs. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, that's always good to start. A nervous time. But okay, so you weren't a professional writer by trade. So what exactly about this story you're writing about got you enough confidence, let's just say, or enough nerve or initiative built up to actually put it together, put it in a book, and put it out there to have people read it? Like, what was the trigger point for you?
It started sort of with a dare to myself. 8 years ago, I love crime fiction and true crime, and I read a ton of books. And at the time, 8 years ago, I sort of was missing the heydays of queer protagonists of the 80s and 90s and all the authors that I love and read. And so I got this crazy idea that I could do this. I'm like, sure, I can do this. Let's try and get my own story. And I'm a total, if that's the correct word, an Americanophile, if you will. I can love all the States stuff. I love the music, the movies, the history of it, and I always felt the kind of story that was rumbling around in my brain would be a perfect setting for somewhere in New York or somewhere in a major city in the States. And then I found out about the blackout of 77 and found that really fascinating, and decided that should at the very least be a part of my book. Originally, there was a lot more about the 77 blackout in it, more chapters that take place during that time. And then just for brevity and keeping, you know, the story not too cluttered, I cut some stuff. But primarily the story happens in present day, quote unquote, 2016, 39 years after the protagonist's dad was killed right before the New York City blackout. That all kind of came together, and I started basically writing it, went through various stages, tried to shop it around a few years ago. It started with Thriller Fest 2018. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, got several rejections, as one usually does. That finally led to some more soul searching of what I wanted the book to be about and getting a clearer focus. And then I had this chance meeting with Level Best Book and Sean Simmons from Level Best Book, which was really a match made in heaven. And here we are.
That's really interesting. But you know, when you say the blackout of 77, I was just reviewing that because Rodney Alcala, you know, the game show killer, had killed a lady in New York just after the blackout.
Oh, did not know that.
I know, because I wrote that book. just a little. That was a pretty evil time for New York in the later 70s, Sam and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But, okay, so you get this together and all that, but this is a really hard question. I ask new writers this a lot. It's because I like to make them squirm. No, it's just, so what gave you that confidence? But, okay, so you write a good book. In your mind, you're like, okay, I can do this. I do this. It's as good as what I read. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what gave you confidence, especially after rejection and stuff like that? What... No, I mean, because we've all done it. I'm not. It's not a slam because we've all been turned away, and that's not. That's just part of the game, I guess you call it. But there, I always wonder in their soul, what is it that kind of goes, I won't take no. This needs to be published, or I believe it should be. I always like to try to find that point in a person.
Yeah.
Do you recognize that time for you?
Oh, yeah. And nothing gave me confidence, I can tell you that much. As a person who is very self-conscious or gets very self-conscious frequently and always feels like, no, I'm not good enough. And no, this isn't good enough. And oh, I don't belong here. It was really, really difficult. So I wrote the book. And of course, the minute I was done, I was like, print, you know, this is good to go. And then, thankfully, you know, how they always tell you not to necessarily share your work with your friends and family. Well, mine are savage. So it was a really, really good experience, because while the book was, or the novel at this stage was very well received, I also got some very harsh criticism from my friends who were very funny about it, but also very direct. And you need that, I think. And so I took that to heart and finally decided, okay, I think I want to go somewhere with this, but I need writing classes. English is not my first language. In fact, I didn't even learn it in school, but more or less on the street or in the gutter, as my friends would say. And you'll hear it as I speak. Sometimes I will say something that's not quite correct, or the grammar is just a little off. And so I realized I need a little bit more help and understanding. So I started taking writing classes, and by 2018, I felt pretty confident to go and shop the book around. And that's when I did Pitch Fest at Thriller Fest, and I was very successful with that, which was fantastic. I really did not expect that, and I was scared. Yeah, I was very scared doing this, but I had a really nice response. Out of 7 people that I spoke to, I got 7 yeses, which was fantastic, but I also got 7 rejections. Yeah, I got 7 rejections following that. So it's kind of like, okay. Yeah, but you had to do it. You kind of have to do it. It's just...
you have to realize that these publishers too, especially the small ones, they're in it to... They have to make money, and they have to produce things that are going to at least break even. And even if they think it's a really good work, can they sell it, right? And so, you know, it's a business too, and they run from that end. So it's not always a negative toward you or maybe what you've written. It might just be the wrong thing that they want to publish, or it doesn't fit what they want to do. So there's a lot of other things. It's easy to say afterwards and once you get something done, but it's hard at the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the really nice thing, actually, the positive I can take from that or take away from that is that all but one very positively commented on my writing, which was fantastic because all this time I'm thinking, you know, all my life people have told me you should write, you should write. And then I'm doing this and suddenly I'm full of self-doubt and thinking, should you write? Should you really do this? Is this really a good idea? And then you have people come back to you that say, well, this isn't working for us. However, we did like your style. We liked your writing. If you have anything else, please keep us in mind and submit again, which was like, well, this is great. This is a step forward. Apparently, I don't suck that much. And people, can, you know, they see something in there. And I realized at the same time, I still need more fine tuning. So I just kept up with more writing classes and learning from others and sending the book out and getting, you know, feedback on it. And then I almost gave up. I had a kind of a darker time. I had just, you know, had moved to the States was here for a few years. And I really missed my family and missed my friends. It wasn't just so easy to always pick up and leave and say, hey, I'm going to Switzerland for I don't know how many weeks or months to see everybody. I had work to do. I work as a photographer. So it was just a difficult time, and I felt the book wasn't going anywhere. So my husband was the one kicking my butt saying, no, you've spent all this time, all this energy, all this money flying to New York, going to conferences. I believe in you. You wrote a good book. You deserve to be heard, but you have to dig your heels in deeper. And so I did. And then had, like I said, I had this sort of chance meeting at a conference where I met Sean, and I reached out to her and said, hey, I know you don't represent queer authors, or at least you don't have anybody in your roster of people. Would you be interested in this book? Would this be something you think might work for you? Because again, as you just said, if they can't sell it, they don't have the audience. Obviously they're not going to be interested. And she read it and came back and she was like, absolutely. We love the book. Let's do this. And yeah, again, here we are. So
Do you think it's harder? Do you think that's another hill to climb, as you would say, because it is gay or queer, as you'd call it, in the book? Like, do you think that's a harder thing? It narrows the places to go?
It probably does. And that would probably be that would be very interesting also to hear from John what his input is on that. I think it's getting better again. It seemed to me for a while that, you know, again, 80s and 90s, you had the heyday sort of queer literature, and you had all these great authors coming out with all these books, and I found most of them, or a lot of them, when I was in my late teens and young man. And they really sort of opened my eyes that there was this totally different world of crime fiction, especially since that was my go-to. And then it sort of went away, and then it became more of a niche thing and a lot of more like male-male romance, which is, you know, great. I'm all for it. But you could tell that the big publishers seemed to shy away from signing these authors. Perhaps there wasn't big enough a market. And so I thought it was a hurdle, and I fully expected people to sort of just go, oh, what are you writing? And then you tell them and it's like, oh, it's gay. And, you know, it's like, that. And I didn't really experience that, especially once I joined the, you know, crime fiction chapters, Mystery Writers of America, Thriller Fest, Sisters in Crime. It was exceptionally welcoming, and everybody seemed to have their place and be welcome. And that was a really great experience. However, I think today, and maybe that's just my shortcoming of not marketing it right or saying it right, but if you talk to people, I still have always that feeling of telling someone about the book, which to me was always telling a story that could happen to anyone. It doesn't matter who the person is per se. The story could happen to someone with a little bit of, you know, suspension of disbelief. But but you also then finally hone it in closer and say, but my protagonist is gay. And it's just a fact of life. It's not, it doesn't solve the crime. It doesn't have any special power. It is just another person's experience and truth, if you will. And I could imagine that a lot of people would still say, oh, well, then I guess it's not for me. And I have to accept that. But, you know, I would love to hear what John has to say also.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so interesting. Like you're saying, there was this heyday in the, you know, 80s and early 90s. And I fear that one of the chief things that cause the problem or cause it to go away were the box stores, these big bookstore box stores, Barnes & Noble and Borders. When they had domain, they sort of put all the gay authors back in the gay and lesbian section, as it was known then. And yeah, it became kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of a ghetto for ghettoized us.
Yeah.
Before, there were all these great queer gay bookstores going on. And then that these other large monsters put those out of business and then put us in the back.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until Amazon came along and these sorts of things, we kind of started to see more energy in those, people started connecting and finding these writers again. Now we're kind of having a resurgence of both older writers coming back and then some new writers coming in.
Yeah.
I think that it's still it's something the publishing industry is working on a bit. I hope it's working on, but this idea of, only gay people want to read gay books, that kind of idea that you're always niche. And yeah, I think, we're having a new generation of readers who are not going to be reading in the sort of niche. They'll be reading across difference, I guess. So I think publishers got to kind of get out of that mindset. And that means like, they see like Marco, your book, they'll be like, this is a book, anyone would be interested in reading because it's just a good mystery. Right. So
I think it happens both ways too. Cause I've got, I don't know how many books out now in true crime, and it's not marketed well in the gay community, even though I'm gay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of not really something that none of the gay publishers have ever approached me about ever doing anything. Not even Grindr Serial Killer or some of the ones that are, I guess it's a dark subject, but I have to go, it gets done on regular publishing formats, companies, not the gay ones. And it's certainly not promoted in that way. So I think it works both ways.
Yeah.
But you're right. I don't even think of you as a gay writer, John.
Yeah. Well, in some ways I prefer to be, that's often in my subject matter, but it's not like, I would hate to feel like I had to write a book with a gay character in it. I don't know, Marco, if you feel that way, but it's what I'm doing, or I have queer characters in my books, but I would sometimes maybe want to write a book that didn't have one, I would hate to feel sort of like in that, squarely in that alley if I had, I'm not sure how you feel about that, but.
No, absolutely. I agree. Actually, it's funny because when I started as a photographer, I instantly, because I photographed men and a lot of naked men, I became the gay photographer. I was always labeled a gay photographer, and it seemed like that's the only thing I can do in people's minds because everybody kept saying it. And I really hated that because I thought, wait a second, I can do this and I can do that and I can try something different. For a long time, I didn't want to. So now it's the same thing. At the time, I just wanted to photograph people, and a majority of them were men. And I was hoping that people, straight, gay, whatever, would enjoy the images if those images spoke to them. Not whether I was gay or if the models were gay, it shouldn't matter. And the same for writing. It is true that I have a gay protagonist in this one, and I have a short story coming out in an anthology that doesn't feature any gay characters. My goal is to write stories and hopefully tell stories that people are interested in, regardless of whatever, to make it real broad. That would be the goal. I don't know, but that's people, we have to label everything. And I'm the same way. I always have to label stuff. And I'm like, why am I doing this? It can't just be a more broader general approach to describe this or that. It doesn't have to have a label because I don't want it. So maybe that's just human nature.
Yeah, it is. I think it's okay to an extent. We just have to realize, and we can't fall into the trap of when we label something, then we know what it is because we don't.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because I saw some of your photos, and actually I didn't realize you were photoing naked men. Yeah.
Yeah, not on my website. I cleaned up my act for America.
Yeah, they'll come burn your house down. get them going. No, because I didn't realize, actually. I saw some of the pictures, and they looked very nice. That you have, like, houses and different. I thought, it looks really good. You're a good photographer. I found it interesting, but you're right. People will label you and then think they know, oh, that's what he does. And then that's just what they'll think. That's just how it is. America's kind of hard that way once you get labeled. So so with this story, where did this story come from for you? Like, does it come from just you're sleeping in bed at night and it comes to your mind? Do you see something somewhere and it kind of builds from there? Do you see someone in the coffee shop in Palm Springs and you're thinking, oh, and you start creating the story around them? Like, where does it happen for you?
Yeah, it can be a little of everything. So for Blackout, that was what do you call it? See, now my German is failing me. It's a combination of different things. It was, you know, reading about certain events that happen in the States or in Manhattan specifically. And then my idea of what do you want to say with this book? What do you want to do? Because for me, for Blackout anyway, it was pretty much the story of a person who gets thrown, an average person who's suddenly faced with traumatic experiences and has to, his life is, you know, unraveling before his eyes. What does he do next? Is he going to succumb to it? Is he going to overcome it? And if so, how? And can he find a certain strength inside of him? And I was drawing from my own experiences, and so that made it a slightly different experience for that particular book than for the other writing that I'm trying to get done now. I do sometimes go places and I see something. For example, we were driving to see my husband's family up in Butte, Montana. So we were driving through Amish country, and it was just gorgeous. It was so different than other stuff that I'd seen. And we saw all these, you know, little towns and all these churches. And suddenly I thought, you know, how would it be for a queer person to grow up here with religion being a big factor and a problem for that particular person. So I started taking notes, and it was interesting that, you know, the environment sort of gave me an idea for a story that I planned to write one day. So far, we only have cliff notes. And then, sometimes you travel and suddenly it's like, oh, how about this? How about that? So it absolutely happens. But often I'm also trying to figure out who's the person first, who is the person, the protagonist or the antagonist that fascinates me, or who fascinates me that I feel deserves a book or a story. And then the rest kind of falls into place after.
So do you have something that you want people to get out of your book other than the story? Like, so when I take home Blackout and I read it, at the end of the book, of course, I go through the story and I learn about the characters and the events that happen. But is there something underlying there?
Well, for me, personally for me, and I don't know if anybody else is going to get that out of it, but for me, it was about overcoming your fears and, you know, rediscovering perhaps yourself. Who are you as a person? Who did you think you were until these moments occurred, until these things happened to you? Who are you after? Have you grown, and how? And then another thing for me, very important in this particular book, was the topic of friendship and family, the families that we create as we go through life. While there are a lot of things based on my life and my actual friends, in this book, a lot of it is also fictional, and I did not experience a lot of the things that Frank was going through. But one of the things that in my life has gotten me through a lot of tough times are my friends of by now 20 years and my family. And I consider my friends who are not of blood, relation, just as much family as my mom and my dad and my sister, and I would do anything for them. And so that was very important to me, and I wanted that to come through in the book, that family, the way, you know, anyone might define it. Does not necessarily have to be the same family. Someone else defines it, but it still counts.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. One thing I kept on thinking about is, and this maybe is, putting my own interest on top of it, was, you know, you're a photographer. I've written my first novel centers around a photographer, and yeah. I'm very interested in, like, you know, there's a real creative impulse with both the activity of writing and the activity of taking a picture. Do you feel like, as you're creating, do you feel like there's this intersection between the two, or do you think they're kind of separate and distinct?
I hope I got this right. I think they are distinct. Like, are you talking specifically for this book, asking for this book?
Well, I could ask. Yeah. I mean, the book or in general, however you want to answer it.
there is definitely a creative aspect, to both things. And the photography is a lot about, for me anyway, is a lot about spontaneity, but also preparation. And so, let's say, as far as writing the book, there was a lot of spontaneity, but not a lot of preparation. And so the preparation had to come after, which was what made the book a lot better than it was in the beginning. as far as the story itself, because I wanted the character based on me, because I knew me, I thought I knew how I'd react in certain situations, a lot of the characters based on me. And so I gave them a lot of my history and my experiences, because I felt that would flesh it out and would make it very three-dimensional. But at the same time, I really did not want photography to be a major element other than struggling photographer like I was during that time and working several jobs on the side to make it, even though I did get my 5 seconds of fame. And it was really that short. But I had moments where I was published around the world, and I got my work in a lot of really great magazines and books. And I was really proud of that. But there was also no money in it. And so eventually I had to veer away from that and find a different market in photography that actually paid my bills. And so, I wanted to marry that in the book to kind of show that. You know, it can be a difficult, and not everybody's instantly successful. Not everybody's an overnight success.
Sure.
I'm
just curious, even, and maybe I'm drilling down too much, but like the, act of, I guess I'm a very visual writer. I do have a good bit of description in mind, and I tend to visualize a lot. And I don't know, that's not true for all writers, right? I mean,
yeah.
Some are much more story, there's just all different approaches, and none of them are wrong. I was just curious if you, because clearly you're a very visually sensitive person, whether that also, you felt like that came up in your writing, or whether you didn't, or if you thought about it. I mean,
maybe. Absolutely. I hope it did.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I thought it did, but you know, the reader has to be the I guess it's going to be the final judge on that, but I really hoped it did, because to me, and yes, as a visually sort of engaged person, in that sense, the writing for me was very visual. In the sense, yeah. I could instantly see the scene. I see the scene before I write it, and it's like a movie. It's already ready to go, so it could already be a miniseries or whatever in my head.
Right.
And so it now comes the moment of saying, all right, how do I put that on the page? I can see it in my head. I can even smell it. But how do you put it on the page to make the reader see and experience the same thing that you did, or at least close to it? And the book originally was a lot longer. And again, it had to be cut down just to be, you know, concise. And I hope not too much got lost in descriptions where, you know, you wanted to set a scene. Because, of course, I'm Swiss. Until almost 5 years ago, I lived in Switzerland. And even though I used to fly for the airlines and I visited New York well over 200 times by now, I never lived there. And so, yeah, I have my memories and I know what it feels like visiting, but I didn't really know what it felt like living there day after day. So I took some liberties. And then, of course, I spoke to my friends. But at the same time, I wanted to make sure I did the city enough justice to come alive in the pages and come across as New York and be kind of specific and not very generic, but also not bog the story down with pages and pages after, you know, of description, because pretty much everybody knows New York and has their own impression of what it is. So, yeah.
No, that's great. That's I felt that. So,
thank you.
That's interesting. So, you put a lot of your own life into the book. It sounds like a lot of the things you're challenged with in your life in the past, you've incorporated in the story.
Yeah, to an extent, I did. And I think, you know, and now after, you know, afterwards, going to all these crime conventions, crime writing conventions and stuff, you have the people who say, oh, you know, write what you know. And then there's those who say, write what you don't know, et cetera. So I started with write what I know, because there was also a lot that I don't know. I did not grow up in New York. I did not ever live there for an extended period of time. Fortunately, my dad lived to be of a very, very advanced age, so I was not ever going through a traumatic experience like that. So I was making up a lot of stuff and felt I needed a balance. And so that's why I chose a character where I knew I could infuse a lot of my personal experiences into that, as well as the close friends who were based on my close friends. And I just sort of fictionalized them. They gave them totally different identities and all that sort of stuff. But it made it easier for me at the time to say, how would X, Y, and Z react if I said such and such? And it was fun to do that. And they loved it. They thought it was a great idea and have not sued me so far. So it's just kind of, you know, it was a marriage of basically two separate things to try and create something that hopefully reads well for you know, the reader and who's engaged enough so that it feels real enough. But I also had to be careful not to put too much into that, especially of my own experiences, and because, well, you know, once that's out, people feel like they know you. And to an extent they do. I'm an open book. I have no problem talking about anything. But at the same time, it's maybe not necessary. You want to have the reader have their own experience with the character. They need to know certain things about him or her, but then they also should be able to have their own feelings and emotions about them.
Hmm. So who are your influences? It doesn't have to be writers. It can just be who sort of seeps into your writing.
I have no idea. I wish, I can tell you this, I wish, and I have a whole list of authors I wish to seep into my writing. Back from the olden days, if you will, I love Joseph Hansen, Armistead Maupin, Michael Nava, but at the same time, I also read John Connolly, and Michael Connolly, and Dennis Lehane, like all these writers that have been with me for so long. I love their style. All of them are different. And far be it from me to compare myself to anyone, but I was hoping that by reading their work, I would pick up on a certain rhythm, perhaps, that appealed to me. I honestly couldn't say. I hope that they all sort of influenced me in a way, because I love their work, but I don't know that I wouldn't go as far as say that I succeeded, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, that's good. But now, if you were, you know, when you look back at this book, now that, you know, it's being published, do you think you would change anything about it?
That's a tough one. I would say right now, this very moment, I am as happy as I've ever been with it, because the last changes happened only a few months ago. By rewriting a very large section of it, an idea that I'd had for a long, long time, but wasn't sure if I should go with it or not. And then I discussed it with my editor. So I feel that it's the best it can be at this particular time and moment. However, and you've noticed this in my answers, which can be rambling at times, I would have loved to include more stuff about the blackout. I love music, and so I would have loved to put even more stuff like that in there. But you also don't want to bore the reader that might have a certain interest, but not an extended interest. They don't want to read page after page after, you know, the music scene of the 70s and all the fantastic singers and groups that came out at that time. So I really had to kind of bog down on it. Plus, I had some really nice, I thought, sort of side stories, subplots that involved the friends that I were very near and dear to my heart, but it just made the book a lot longer, and they also took away from the mystery. And so finally I had to decide what I wanted to do. And this is Franco's story. This is a young man, well, not so young, a 43-year-old guy who had a very traumatic experience at 4 and now again at 43. And I wanted to stick with him. And so some stuff had to be cut. So maybe next time.
Oh, you cut out my part.
Yeah.
I'm not in it anymore. I'm devastated. Oh, man. Wow. So do you have a relationship with your main character?
Yeah, I mean, at this point I would say yes. And I had to step away several times thinking, okay, I need the character to let I need to let the character take over. And he finally did. It was really interesting to see that while I felt I knew and everything about him, there were several surprising instances here and there during the writing where I was like, no, this character is going to go and do something different than I would do. But I feel like I know him fairly well. And I care about him very deeply, as I do about my other characters, where I'm like, I would like to see where they go from here, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, I find it interesting because fiction writers have always a relationship. Like, they call their characters their kids or, you know, there's always these relationships which, you know, personally, my characters I can't stand. But they're killers.
Yeah.
They're real.
Yeah.
So it's, you know. So what do you think about doing more in this sort of field? Or did you plan on writing more stories like this?
Yeah, I would love to, now that I'm done and this book has a home and it's coming out, I totally have a sequel in mind. And that very much depends on whether the readers, you know, take positively to Blackout and say, hey, we absolutely want to know what happens next. I never saw it as a series because I do not want this to be Murder, He Wrote. There are a lot of people who do this and they do it really well. I don't see myself as that kind of person in this setting because we have a very average person who's a photographer. He's struggling. He's in the situation. He's not really an amateur sleuth, although he is trying to get, you know, to the root of things with a little bit of help and obstruction of the police. But at the same time, you know, doing four or five books with that character would not work for me. Who knows what I think in 10 years, but right now it doesn't. But with everything that happens to this character and all the really terrible things I throw at him, that changes a person. And I very specifically wanted to end the book on a note where my character, well, there are possibilities, but there are also repercussions to everything that's happened to him and everything that he's done. And so it, you know, it gives me choices if I want to and if the interest is there. But right now I am working on a completely different thing. I always wanted to do a police procedural with a character that is either gay or bisexual. Right now I've written him as a bisexual man because I find that fascinating. Myself, I'm not bisexual, but I had relationships with men who were, and I have friends who are, and I find it interesting to hear their stories and how bisexuality is still sort of it's there in the, you know, in all the letters of the LGBTQ community, but I read a lot of reports and I hear that also, yeah, told to me from time to time that being bisexual makes you this, not a unicorn, but you're hard to, again, label. You're hard to label. You know, are you this? Are you that? Some people find that very exhausting, living as bisexuals, and I find that very fascinating. So I felt perhaps trying my hand at a procedural where I have a chance to come back with the same character if it's successful for, you know, 3 or 10 books is a better fit. Because we're not talking about an average Joe in an unusual situation. You're talking about a homicide detective or a private eye or whatever who does this for a living. That makes it more natural, and I felt that was important.
So does it matter what the critics say or what the reviews end up being or how well it sells? No, I mean this, and I don't mean like it's a disaster and you get like 21 stars and all this negative stuff, but I'm just saying, at the end of the day, moving forward, does it matter if it's not where you want it to be, let's say?
I really hope that it won't. And that goes back to me getting very self-conscious very, very quickly sometimes and then suddenly doubting all my abilities and stuff. So a part of me is, of course, kind of worried at this point. Now, I've gotten some really wonderful blurbs and really good feedback from other writers and from people who've read it. So that makes me very appreciative, but also puts me in a really nice position. But now it's open season. So everybody has a word. Everybody has an opinion. And I mean, you know this, John. I mean, and Al, you both know this. You go online and you see, you know, I watch what happens to other writers as well. I go and read reviews because I perhaps want to pick up their book or I already have and I read it and I see what other writers are tweeting and saying online. And it is a battlefield out there. It is just, there are so many horrible people who just live to make people miserable, it seems like. They have absolutely no other reason for living, it seems. So, you know, it happens. I have to develop a thick skin because eventually someone will not like what I wrote, whether they, for whatever reasons, it doesn't even matter. And at that point, you have to, or I have to be strong enough and hopefully have enough vision to take out what's important to me, because sometimes criticism is absolutely warranted, and you can learn from it. But then there are those people There, those people, like that one reviewer, when I brought out my photo book of male nudes almost 20 years ago, I was written up clear across the world. I had beautiful reviews in the States, in Australia, in Germany, in Switzerland, everywhere. People were really gracious. I got to do portfolios. My pictures were everywhere. And then there was this one review that was so personal and scathing and, you know, like, stopped short of calling my mother a prostitute or whatever. I mean, it was just that bad. It was just really personal and horrible. And I thought, oh my God, what did I do wrong? And so it took me several years to actually forget the wording. I could repeat it back to you verbatim for a while. It was that it left that much of a mark on me. But now, years later, I fortunately cannot anymore. I just know the gist of it. So, you know, there might be that person. I've seen it on social media from other writers where they are devastated that somebody was so mean to them without a reason. But that's how we are, unfortunately, these days. And I try to focus on the positive. So in a long way around to answer your question, I hope that it won't matter, because it would be unfortunate if that kind of killed my joy of writing and wanting to tell stories. I should still always believe in what I do and know that there is someone out there, whoever that may be, who wants to hear what I have to say, who wants to read what I'm telling them, and keep going and become a better writer.
Yeah, I think you just have to keep it in perspective and maybe put it in its own compartment, because I think at the end of the day, if you focus on what the noise is around you, you lose focus of what you're doing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So whether it's really praising, oh, you're the best, oh my God.
Right.
Or yeah, either right. It's like, oh my God, you couldn't write if your yep. you know, life depended on whatever they're doing, all of that stuff outside of you, if you start focusing on that, then you're no longer doing what you want to do. You know what I'm yeah. saying?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I'm totally that person. Unfortunately, I really am learning a lot to let that go and not listen too much to the chatter that's going on, whether it's good or bad, and, you know, believe in myself more and say, I can do this and I want to do this. And if it means I have to dig in my heels deeper, I will do it. I'm getting better at it, but it's difficult because, yeah, it can be distracting.
Well, it's owning the bad stuff, too. Sure. I look at there's things I do wrong. There's things I've made mistakes on. There's things I could have done better. But yeah. you look at it and go, okay, well, I own that. That's who I am. Okay, so things have turned out, and hopefully I get it right next time, let's say. So you got to kind of own it, but not let people throw you off your job. If that makes sense, because it's the worst thing yeah. in the world. You know, people will, you know, for just because they don't like your hair or your...
Yeah, totally.
You know, oh, he's from Switzerland.
Oh, gosh, those Swiss.
Swiss and their chocolate. My God. No, but just keep moving forward. I think you're doing good work, and you just kind of got to keep building on what you do, and don't worry about, you know, it's weird how it goes and what sells yeah. and what doesn't, and, you know, and when it does. Good thing about books is a lot of times things sell years after you put them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, really take off, and you kind of go, wow, that's weird. Anyway, now, do you have a website? But people can come find you and stalk you.
Yes, I do. I just revamped it so that you now can go to the left for books and to the right for photographs. The webpage is www.marcocarocari.com. And you can pre-order or buy the book there. You can find out about me, or you can look at my photographic work that I've done over the years. Minus the nudes. You have to dig a little deeper. The internet has them. but yeah, marcocarocari.com is the website.
And there's contact for people if they have a something yes. they want to. Fantastic. And we'll have that on our website as well as your book, so people can do one click. They can pick up the book. They can find your website. And it's fantastic. Hey, so... has all the COVID and all of this stuff around you affected you in your writing and even your photography? Do you find that it kind of, makes it hard to work, or does it have any influence on you at all?
It did, but with the photography, bizarrely enough, I feel horrible saying this, knowing so many people have, you know, lost their jobs and stuff. But my year was pretty good because Palm Springs exploded literally with the real estate market. People mm-hmm. wanted to get out of cities, so they wanted to buy here. And so all of a sudden, everybody who wanted to make a buck put their house up for sale, which puts me into action. I'm photographing a lot of these homes that go on the market. So I was very busy, which kept me from writing. So, you know, but I'm very grateful. I'm very, very grateful that that happened. I'm very fortunate. But it also, you know, you have, it's Groundhog's Day. I mean, for the longest time, we were just always home. And I tried to write, and I actually wrote about a third of this new book that I'm trying to do. And it being locked down at home and then having all these restrictions really kind of screwed with that, because I could not go to Los Angeles to research areas other than, you know, doing it on Google. And I have this one contact, wonderful lady, who's an ex-detective with the LAPD, and she was like, oh, sure, let's go, you know, to my old precinct. I'll introduce you to people. And, I mean, how wonderful is that? And I have been chancing to do this, but we couldn't do it. We had to postpone, and we still haven't done it because of all the stuff that happened. So, unfortunately, in my particular case, feeling like I need to know more about the stuff that I'm writing, in this case, procedure with the police, which I've never done in my real life. It kind of puts a damper on my writing because I'm not sure I can write the scene authentically. I always feel I need to know about it before I do it. So, you know, but yeah, we made it through most of it pretty much unscathed here, fortunately, and, you know, taking one day at a time. But, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I know it's important to get as much of the detail and being part of the real life to put into your book in order to, you know, because the worst thing in the world is reading a book and then someone's in the writing it, you know, it's totally wrong, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a good thing. It's a good thing. No, I was just wondering if it made it a little darker, if when things around you are kind of in a dark place, does that kind of get into your writing?
This one did. I always intended to write a darker book than Blackout is. A Blackout, despite the topic and some of the more serious things that happen in it, has a lot of light scenes, especially between the friends. And I wanted that. That was important to me. But this new work in progress does not. And it is actually quite dark. And I think that COVID did not help it. I'm actually at a point where I'm thinking, okay, it's, do people just want to slit their wrists when they start, you know, on page one? I need to lighten it up a little bit more and find a different kind of, maybe it's too dark. So we'll see where it goes. I'm sure I have plenty of rewrites ahead of me.
Well, yeah, you don't want them slitting their wrists on your first chapter.
Yeah.
You're not going to get any reviews.
True, that too. But it is true. I mean, you know, for the longest time, we had no idea where this is going. And I guess we have a better idea now, but still every day you have the news. And it can be, and especially at last year during the summer and the fall, it was like, where is this going? I haven't seen my family in a year and a half, except for, you know, on Zoom calls and stuff. And my mom was supposed to come see me here. She just turned 80, but she's really spry. She's more like a 68-year-old. And she's in great health, and she wants to come and see how I live here. She's never seen it. She took care of my dad for many, many years until he died a year and a half ago. And that's the last I saw everybody, which, you know, travel, it kind of screws with your mind a little bit. And so, yeah, I had a lot of darker moments, and I think it reflects in my writing at the time. So we'll have to brush that up a little and make sure it's not too dark.
I just wonder too, you know, when you were writing Blackout, for instance, does that affect your photography work? Not so much the mechanical part of it, the technique of it.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Sorry. Well, the style, because here you are, you're taking photos and you're doing it as an artwork. You're doing it with a style and an impression. So when you start writing a story like Blackout, where there's, you know, some challenges in it. There's things going on to the character. Does that come into your photography as well? Like, is it all sort of linked with you?
I don't think so. Not for the kind of work I do now. If I do architecture, then it might be slightly different, because often with real estate, you have to make sure a house looks the best it can, but you also don't have the time to, you know, to be artistic. You want to give an impression. However, when I do my personal work, I go out at night and photograph these, you know, landmarks and stuff like that. That's different. And I think that's probably closer to the writing process, where you look at what you've done and then you really start dissecting it and looking at it or approaching it from a different angle, because you're thinking about it different. What do you want to say with this image? Once it's done, is it just a pretty picture, or does it tell a story of sorts, or do you want to create a certain mood? And so I would say it's probably more the other way around, not the writing to the photography, but the photography to the writing, where I try to be more, and I don't know the word right now, but I, you know, when I write, that I try to be as photographic as I can be, so that I don't over-explain something, but the reader pretty much gets what I'm saying and can, you know, gets an image from the place or the person that's described, being direct with, you know, what's the point of the scene? What's the point of this character? And if you want there to be a mental image, what are you going to do about it without hammering the point too much?
Very interesting. Very, very interesting person you are. Well,
thank you. I don't know about that, but thank you.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating. The book we were talking about is Blackout, and our guest has been the author, Marco Caro Carey. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, both of you, John and Al, for having me. That's fantastic. And for giving writers a platform like this. This is fantastic. Thank you.
Of course, it's been delightful.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.